You're listening to a special series of Between Two Flags for UNA Canada's Green Corps program. Through regular podcasts, Green Corps will invite a wide range of experts to discuss complex environmental, economic, and social issues. Live tweet as you listen with hashtag Between Two Flags.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Canada Green Corps' Between Two Flags, an innovative initiative designed to bring Canadian sustainability experts to whatever device you're using to listen to our podcast today. And today we are very honored to have Tikva Mindorf, who works with the Niagara Sustainability Initiative. I'll just take a second and explain what the Niagara Sustainability Initiative, or NSI, from here on in does. So NSI is the not-for-profit organization engaging and connecting businesses in Niagara in an effort to advance economic and environmental sustainability. We work to help businesses identify, understand, and reduce their carbon footprint to become more sustainable, both environmentally and economically. Through our efforts and programs, such as the Carbon Project, they've become the go-to source for organizations interested in tackling sustainability. We promote opportunities to develop a mindset for an environmentally and economically thriving Niagara, and to integrate these values into all future planning as their community grows. Today, we are very honored to have Tikva Mindorf, a lifelong resident of the region. Tikva is a graduate of the political science program at Brock University and lives in St. Catharines with her husband. As the executive director of NSI, Tikva oversees the nonprofit organization with 5 full-time employees and over 50 volunteers. NSI's flagship program, the Carbon Project, supports over 20 members from local organizations who are actively improving their environmental footprint through ongoing monitoring, managing, and mitigation of their carbon emissions. In her short tenure with NSI, Tikva has been recognized as one of Corporate Knight magazine's 30 Under 30 in sustainability, Niagara's 40 Under 40 leaders in business, a finalist for the Women in Business Award from the Greater Niagara Chamber of Commerce, and as an emerging leader in Canada's Clean 50 Awards. Tikva is heavily invested in community development in Niagara and volunteers her time outside of NSI as a board member of the TD Friends of the Environment Fund and as a financial agent for the Green Party Association of Niagara. Tikva, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today.
That's fantastic, and quite a bio. And I am really pleased to see how well aligned NSI's work is with the mandate and goals of Canada Green Corps. Maybe I'll just give you a chance to speak a little bit in your own words about NSI, and maybe following up to that a little bit about the Carbon Project, which I'm very interested to hear more about.
Yeah, great. I could definitely do that. So, as you said, I'm a local to Niagara, and working with Niagara Sustainability Initiative is really great because I really enjoy working in the environment, starting out just with like hands-on, you know, community cleanups and community gardens, and moving up to corporate sustainability, of which I learned about more in my third and fourth year of university at Brock. I think that our programs align very well. When I first started at NSI, I think I had my own reservations. You know, being candid, I had just finished doing my my fourth year, which I focused mostly on corporate social responsibility, and from coming from a political science background, I was quite critical of the different organizations and around the world, because I was mostly invested in international development. So I was very critical about the concept of corporate social responsibility, but I really liked, I guess I got to model a lot of my own research, and I read a lot about the United Nations, what was it called, the Conference on Sustainability in Johannesburg, I think in 2006. So that was sort of like a turning point, I guess, in a lot of what I was learning about. And I see sort of NSI as fitting into that framework really well with the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN, and trying to get, you know, young people mobilized to do, to see what they can do themselves in or outside of their work, as well as sort of pushing this framework forward, because I do really I wouldn't say I don't have my reservations, but I do think that it's the best option we have right now, moving forward as a, I guess, globally and locally.
Right. No, that's very interesting. And that's an interesting, I think a lot of our Green Corps participants would, what's the right word? Would share your sentiments maybe about the skepticism towards CSR and sort of that front facing, as maybe it should be, but sort of the reputation that maybe it's not really intrinsic or coming from an altruistic place, I guess. But that's interesting that it's changed your mind. And how about the Carbon Project? Maybe you just explain a little bit more about that.
Oh, yes. Okay, so the Carbon Project was started in 2011, I believe, in the first year that NSI existed. And we the way the program works is really trying to motivate businesses in the same way that a Chamber of Commerce would motivate businesses to network and to communicate with one another within a certain geographic area. We, in the same spirit, try to get businesses to understand or promote their own sustainability practices, to network and learn with others who share the same spirit for maybe like a socially or environmentally responsible business.
Okay.
And make it more possible, but also really explain the added value of being environmentally friendly from an economics perspective. So a lot of what we talk about is not your traditional left-wing environmentalism. It's a lot more corporate, talking about facilities, energy usage, automation, a lot of efficiency discussions and stuff. So to me, it's just like a corporate version of what we already learned about in school, but it's learning sort of a very specific language within the business environment.
Very interesting. And so is it's just in Niagara right now, or do you have activities or operations outside of the city or outside of the jurisdiction?
Yeah, so our organization is limited geographically to Niagara. We have no plans to move outside of it currently. The reason for that is that we belong to a network called the Sustainability Collab Network, and that network is provincial, so it's all over Ontario.
Okay.
And there are seven other organizations in 8 altogether, and they are located in areas like Sudbury, Kingston, Ottawa, Hamilton, Durham, and... Oh, I'm missing one, and that's terrible. It's Windfall Ecology Center, and I forget where it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sort of up north near Oshawa, I think. Anyway, so it's somewhere in Ontario, and that sounds really bad. They're going to hate me for saying that. But, and this network represents sort of the same work of the same spirit of the Carbon Project. And Waterloo. The same spirit of the Carbon Project throughout the region and their own regions. And so we do a lot of sharing of our own resources and a lot of our best practices across the network. And there's some standardization, but a lot of it is more of just a spirit of goodwill and collaboration, hence collab, coming from collaboration. So we don't really, I think our areas of expansion are a lot more, we want to go a lot more deeper into the roots of the community. And doing a lot more things like community-based planning, doing sustainability initiatives that are maybe collaborative across different organizations rather than trying to expand out, like we're trying to be more, quality, I guess, over quantity.
Right. No, that's fascinating. I guess, my question is, what are most businesses coming to you with? Are they coming to you with sort of open arms because they're not really sure how to approach corporate social responsibility, or are they coming with you with some ideas already half baked, or what do they want to do?
Yeah, so I would say that most businesses, to be frank, most businesses in Niagara don't quite understand the concept of corporate social responsibility.
Sure.
They see a lot of them understand sort of generally why they would want to be recognized in their community for being a leader, but that is a very different language than the very specific rhetoric around corporate social responsibility. I mean, there's a whole field of academic work dedicated to this. There's international global standards, international and or global standards that you could work within, and most of them are more like more a little bit more simplistic, basic in terms of their approach. I think in Niagara here we I mean, I haven't checked recently, but the last time I checked our stats, we were in the top five of the highest rates of unemployment in Canada. So, I mean, that's including the prairies, or sorry, not the prairies, that's including out east as well. I think that's pretty representative of the approach people take to the environment. If you can't put, businesses are struggling, they can't really spend a lot of time on the environment. So we're really trying to adapt to that and trying to make it more, much easier, a lot more accessible, more affordable for them to participate in our programs. So a lot of our work right now is around education, because we have anything from people not having time to dedicate to this, even though they want to or they wish they could, to people who flat out don't believe climate change exists. So, you have to, it's kind of a large variety here.
That's a spectrum for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so what, how do you, or how does NSI most commonly assist these organizations in becoming more environmentally sustainable? What are some of the activities or initiatives that you're promoting or applying to some of the businesses?
Yeah, so right now the Carbon Project focuses on helping businesses, or really we say organizations because it is public or private.
Right.
So it helps organizations to manage. So that's first by measuring. So that's measuring their carbon emission footprint, so what their emissions look like. And we use some software to do that. So we'll help. One of the resources we provide is the software, a subscription to that through your membership. You get hands-on training, so we have one-to-one meetings with our member support staff member who goes out actually and has quarterly meetings each year with every single member, talking about their, the quality of their data, where the holes are, so talking about how complete it is, updating the emission factors so that, the data we're actually collecting is correct.
Right.
So there's the measuring part, then there's the managing, so really identifying the big gaps that they might have in terms of things they've tried. They might have, already gone paperless, but they might not track any of their transportation, so trying to talk about carpooling. So we'll do what we can without really spending any money, sort of those easy wins that relate to behavior, which is actually a huge piece that we've not necessarily always acknowledged in the past, behavior's huge. So any kind of behavioral changes or, easy wins, those are where the easy wins like lighting retrofits and stuff come in.
Yeah.
And then mitigating would be ways to reduce, or if they've already made all the reductions that they possibly can, big, like large-scale capital projects that we can help them sort of research more about, provide the expertise, make the introductions to other green businesses that do things like, energy retrofits, renewable energy like geothermal or solar, how to do LEED standards. We just finished a LEED certification course with the university. That was great. So introducing, these concepts down here, there's, we as sustainability professionals are people who are always in this environment of the sustainability sector and the renewable energy sector and that sort of thing. And so we talk about this all the time, but a lot of it is really providing resources, sort of feeding it slowly to people so that they can understand, grasp, and then implement, or that we're available to ask questions when that light bulb goes on and they realize that they want to learn more. So a lot of it is resource based. A lot of it's just being available to provide those introductions, and then we do events. So a big part of what we do is events, with networking as a very important piece, because we really want professionals in our sector, or people who just support sustainability, to get to know one another and build community around it. So our events are extremely popular. This month we ran 5, which is a little unusual, but typically we run 1 or 2 a month, and one of them is usually quite a bit larger, and then maybe we'll do like a webinar, and then those events usually attract about, I'd say, like an average of 80 people. So it's pretty good. Like, we've seen a lot of increase in interest lately, so there's definitely becoming easier for us to do our work, but there's still a lot of way to go.
Okay.
Long way to go.
Yeah, no, that's really impressive, and great to listen to the mitigation and adaptation options there. Certainly, carpooling is huge, and I think There's a few questions I have there, but first of all, just going back to the software, are you willing to share which software you use for that sort of needs assessment of the carbon emissions?
So what we're doing right now is we use Verisay. It's an accounting software provided through the Colab network. So we get a group purchasing sort of plan discount arrangement through Colab as one of the member benefits.
Okay.
So Verisay is good. It's the second software we've used. I don't really remember the one that we had before that precedes my time here, but we did have one 2 years ago that we used that was quite different. That software is pretty expensive, so it's like it really a lot of the fee that we have in our membership fees is really based around that software. It costs us I don't really know exactly. I should know this. I think it's $11,000 a year. And the one that we had before that, I think it was $30,000 a year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not very cheap. That's just for access to the software. That's not for actually like getting any kind of tutorial or support for using it. So,
okay.
We're sort of, I guess, monetizing that software a bit, but it's really out of the capacity of any one organization to really pay for on their own.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's really quite expensive, and we'll link to that software in the show notes when we publicize the podcast for anyone who's interested in.
Yeah, I might get in trouble for saying how much it costs, but I think it's pretty expensive.
No, I mean I think it is too, and I mean it's out of the reach probably of many smaller organizations for sure. So, no, that's interesting. And the events that you hold, are they so they're always physically in Niagara, but sometimes you have webinars as well.
Yeah, so one of the things that Colab, we've tried to do with Colab is if we have webinars, we try to enhance our membership, like the value for our membership by sharing across the network our webinar. A webinar doesn't cost very much to put on, it's really just staff time. So there's a big value add for us to be able to, if another network organization is hosting a webinar that they typically charge for, we sort of do a sharing where attendees could be coming from anywhere in Ontario and they get the same member discount, or which is usually free. It's usually free to come
okay.
if you're a member to our events. So they get to come for free to all of those additional network events, and then we share the attendees back and forth. So like if we had someone from Durham, for example, come to our event, we would tell the Durham Sustainability Group that we work with, which of our registrants had come from them, so that they can keep track of how engaged their members are as well, like what resources they're actually using.
Okay.
And that helps guide us in our, long-term strategic planning.
Right. No, that's really interesting. How much does membership cost?
With our organization, right now it's anywhere between $500 and $5,000 a year. The $500 range, it's all dependent on how many employees you have, which is the easiest way for us to gauge sort of the net net revenue or gross revenue that an organization makes each year. Obviously, if they have more money, they'll have more money. Well, that's not necessarily true, but if they have money, they have the budget to pay $5,000 if they have over 500 employees.
Okay.
So that's sort of the rationale behind it. We're currently restructuring our membership, though. We're finding that even that fee, I'd say many of the organizations in Niagara fall in like the $1,000 to $2,000 range, which is anywhere from 20 to over 100 employees.
Okay.
And so that annually is a bit expensive for them, unless, at least that's what we've heard. So I think that speaks to the sort of intersection of their where they place the environment and their priority and how much time and money they have to really, or resources, I guess, they have to dedicate to taking advantage of the project.
Okay.
So we've never had anybody, like everybody cares about the environment here. I really feel that a lot of their frustration, or not, I don't want to say frustration, they're timid. they're very timid in being involved in the project, because we ask right away that they start participating in the measuring of their footprint. And I think that the whole discussion around carbon is a little confusing or overwhelming for a lot of people. Based on their, you just said, like, pay us $200 and this is the kind of community gardens we're doing and this is the work that we're doing in the community, that would almost be more tangible because it's very traditional, like it's very easy to understand.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out right now how to make more of a milestone process to get people right at that education stage, and then how to consistently move them through membership so that they can feel well prepared to take advantage of the Carbon Project when they get to that point. So, like, we've realized now that we've jumped almost too advanced for where the community is. So, we're trying to kind of reestablish where we should go with membership without taking away from the members that are currently part of it, because we do have 20 organizations that are very dedicated to what they're doing with us in the Carbon Project and are very engaged. All of our members are actively meeting with us 4 times a year, if not more than that. Just about their program, so like they're quite engaged. I think we just had another person set a target. That's BD's Basics, which is an office supply company in Niagara, and I don't think I should say their name, but another large organization is looking to set a target for reductions. So there's definitely movement there, but in terms of helping the program grow, we realize we need to sort of get almost like a Carbon Project light going. So that's been something that we've been developing for the last year and a half. Okay. We're almost there. We'll be announcing it in May.
Okay, congrats. That's that'll be quite exciting. And I think I guess my only real comment there was even if you are finding maybe you're a little bit too advanced for members of the community and other organizations, I think it's great that you're aiming high and providing that sort of detailed. I don't want to say complex, because maybe that's not necessarily a great verb to have when you're trying to share information, but it is important, I think, that that organizations like NSI do aim high and provide some, complex again, but detailed information about how to reduce your carbon footprint and a little bit about mitigation and trying to get the emissions down. So that's fantastic. I wanted to ask... you know, and maybe you want to use some examples from Niagara. I'm sure even the national and maybe the North American and international context, you're following various organizations. And I'm thinking about, I think Facebook and Google made certain commitments for clean energy, a percentage, if not 100%. And I know there's a number of other really well-known large corporations that are trying to switch to 100% renewable energy. Do you, in your opinion, and maybe just comment on why you think organizations are doing this. Do you, from your perspective, is it more from an economic standpoint where they can see the writing on the wall and that, you know, simply that wind will be, you know, cheaper than coal or natural gas based developed electricity? Or do you feel there's a lot of social pressures? Do you feel like, I know 70% of millennials, I read in a recent report, are interested in the sustainability of an organization that they might work for. So do you think it's possibly the making the organization more attractive for future employees? Or what are your thoughts on why organizations are more interested in becoming more sustainable?
Well, I feel like you hit a lot of them. You basically sound like a position piece for what we would say to businesses. But okay. I mean, we quote that. I think ours was even higher, so maybe our statistic is a bit outdated. I'm not sure, but I think we had it at over 80% of young people coming into the workforce want to see that, and they want to see that organizations are taking the lead. I think so. That's a big part of it. That there's the employee attraction and retention piece.
Right.
I think the big thing right now is we've hit, I think, a period. I mean, maybe a little bit prior to Trump getting elected, but even so, I think that the advancements in technology and the investment that has happened, you've got almost like we're. I don't want to say there's a tipping point, but I really don't like that analogy. But if you know the reference, there's the tipping point of the critical mass of people who are trying to take the lead for renewables, and that groups like it's really not cutting edge for Google or Apple to invest 100% in renewables. Like it's for a lot of organizations, I think it seems more like a promo piece because it's already so common that they've strategically done it at that prime point where they're going to get the most amount of recognition because of the critical mass. Like they almost did it enough by them joining, they are actually the tipping point.
Right.
So, I mean, kudos to them for being strategically aligned enough to be able to make that decision and to be able to capitalize on the most amount of public recognition that's going to come from it. But I think that there was, you know, 25 years of, if not more, of work in renewables that has come up that's sort of propped up their ability to do that, and they're really just taking advantage of it. But I mean, in a capitalist society, that's, I mean, they're being extremely competitive, and I think that they're doing a great job of that. So I think for them, they see it as they're the monoliths that have the ability to make that investment and make that change. And for technology companies in particular, they don't usually have, especially a group like Google, they might not have the environmental footprint to worry about that another huge corporation might with, you know, geographic land, like property that they own that, you know, competitors might be natural resource developers, natural resource extraction companies, developers, and government, right? So technology, like, to me, making that scale of money, that scale of income as, like, Amazon or Google in the tech industry, you just don't have the corresponding responsibility for land. I mean, their biggest concern is, like, those data hives.
Yeah, the data centers,
But it's not something as intensive as changing over their complete, like, manual practices on the ground.
Sure.
And because they're technology-based and they're so energy-intensive, they're really investing in their future, which I think makes sense. Like, they're not going to be affected by climate change so much, but if there's a lack of energy, they will be affected. So I think they probably have a big concern for the security of the energy grid and making sure that there's a constant supply for energy in the future, not thinking like down the road. But I think most of it for them is just that they're seeing the online demand. They're paying attention to what people are saying on the internet and in the media, but not just the formal media, but like you know, data scraping and web analyzing the web content and seeing that's just it's time to invest. So what we're trying to do here is really get people to tap into it and say, like, look at what they're doing, look what's been happening for the last, you know, at least 10 years or 11 years, I guess, now. This is Conference on Sustainable Development happened a decade ago, and it's just starting to be popular now. So I think that we're trying to get people here kind of up to speed and kind of snapping our fingers at them going, like, come on, like, you're missing out. This is where the world's going, and you don't want to get left behind. So it's just trying to make sure some people don't care, though. They're happy doing things as business as usual.
Right. Okay, so I got the sense that, you know, it's not really out of sheer altruism or some sort of wonderful forward-looking view of the future that other companies are adopting the renewables. What about for smaller organizations that that you're working with in the Niagara area? What are they, you know, where? And actually, you know, one of the questions I would like to ask for just for all the Green Corps participants are, what are some of the easy wins that you've identified with various organizations? Even if the Green Corps participants were interested in making a quick presentation to their own colleagues, you know, during a lunch hour or something, about ways that their organizations could decrease their carbon footprint or become more sustainable in some way. What are some of the easy wins that you're finding commonplace?
Well, for sure. I'm going to answer that in two sections because there's two questions there.
Yeah.
The first one about what about smaller organizations and do I find them to be different? I'd say that there's the big thing I would consider is when we're doing an analysis right now on our target audiences because we're looking at expanding out to individuals, families, community groups, and businesses. So we're going to do be like holistically approaching sustainability on a community community-wide scale.
Okay.
And so what I think a really great observation from that exercise, which we just did yesterday, is that small businesses, I think, tend to really want to be sustainable because of their lack of distribution of labor. So usually if you're like a sole proprietor or you have a company of anywhere from 1 to 20 people, everybody is very intensely involved in almost all aspects of the company.
Sure.
So you just really have more of a sense of what their impact is, and you really have a depersonalized business. Like, you're not a cog in the wheel. You are the organization. And I think because of that, small businesses have a lot more of their sort of altruism coming out. I think people are, altruism is a whole philosophical subject that I could go on about, but I think that people are emotionally motivated to, for a number of reasons, to want to act in a sustainable way, and it's just a lot more possible when you don't have that great breakdown in terms of distribution of labor. So then when you work in like large organizations, they're looking at it more pragmatically. One of my employees just got really excited about showing me popcorn. So that just tells you how fun our environment is in here. He just shouted it out through the window. But I think that the in the larger organization, we find we need champions. We need key employees and key power positions who can really steer the ship, because there is that great distribution of labor, and people have to really kind of work with blinders on to get their amount of work done. So you really have sort of two substantially different approaches to talking to large business and corporate interest compared to a small business personal interest. And because it's because of that that we really wanted to expand out to doing community sustainability, because it's really hard to engage employees in the workplace in a large organization with only one person. But if you can get people sort of in every aspect of their life starting to think about sustainability, it becomes so much easier to incorporate into the workplace. So that's the first piece. Sorry, I talked for so much. But then the second bit was about what are some of the easy wins that organizations could do. So some of the ones that, I can list you a couple of examples that are recent. We have had pretty much everybody go through the lighting retrofits. There's great incentives out there for switching over to LED bulbs through your local utility companies, at least in Southern Ontario. I think that is going to be dependent on where you're from, but switching over to LED lights is like a huge energy saving opportunity. Automating your lights as well. So, you know, automating your parking lot, putting in motion sensors and detectors, that can save a lot of the sort of power that's not really being used by a person. Some of that you have to kind of navigate government standards and legislation around health and safety, because certain areas need to be lit even if people aren't there. You encounter problems like that in like nursing homes or condominiums and that sort of thing, where stairwells always have to be lit. So lighting retrofits is a very easy one. Installing like low flow taps or low flow toilets, and I forget what they're called, but like the high pressure taps. It can aerate your water and make it a lot softer for you as a person, which is a great social benefit, but also save like 50% of the water. It's insane. So easy things like that. In terms of retrofits, we've had people put in cogen plants. That's a big one. So one of our members is a retirement home. And they just installed a cogen plant, and they're looking at quite a long payback period, but they, they're in a position where that's the best decision for them. And so we've helped them sort of through that process, to help make introductions to the local utilities, and helping get that project going, and also making sure that they understand what they'll need to do going forward and be there to for reference if they need stuff in the future. So they've been really great to take the lead on that. And I think they just see it because they have residents, and the residents care and are interested, but they're also looking at it from a, we use a lot of energy, how can we take advantage of what we're already using, or how can we save money on this? We've had a lot of companies either, like BD's Basics, for example, they have a lot of delivery trucks that go out because they're an office supply company. So they've either switched to hybrid and or electric vehicles, and they track their emissions of their vehicles through our software as well. So they're able to see the benefits of switching over to electric, so stuff like that. So those are the easy things: putting up posters, having green theme meetings, so bringing staff together and having us come in. I know that I had this great article about how to legitimize the work that we're doing in terms of sustainability, and the idea of external legitimacy is you need another organization to come in and actually talk to your staff, because for some reason people just take it more seriously when someone else is saying it. So sort of like you don't listen to your
that
parents, but you
listen
to your,
one's
parents,
listening to me
your friends,
here,
you know. So we do a lot of stuff like that, and right now a lot of it is education based. But in a lot of the other regions or areas that we work with members in the CoLab network, they have, you know, quite a variety of different projects. They have some really strong carpooling programs. They even have like competitions between member organizations of who can be the best carpooler and stuff like that. And carpooling accounts for 30% of the emissions, carbon emissions in Southern Ontario. So since most of us are in the Golden Horseshoe, you can't really underestimate the value of carpooling. So we even carpool here at our work.
Well,
so
that's actually great to hear. And I know that a few of us at UNA Canada have either switched to cycling or for carpooling. I guess that was one of my next questions is, you know, NSI is focused on organizations, but, you know, while you're there, do you ever give tips and hints on like individual personal behavioral changes that could reduce emissions, or is it more focused on the activity and the sort of the metabolism of the organization?
No, so we definitely do. So we finished our strategic plan. So we're about 6 years old now, and as an organization. So we finished our first strategic plan outside of like, you know, our long-term growth strategy last summer. So one of the things that we identified was that we really wanted to talk more to the individuals, families, and community groups that are out there, because it's an audience that is very interested in the work that we're doing. We've seen great success working with businesses, and the type of engagement we get with businesses, you know, it is pretty amazing, considering our economy here, that we have the amount of support that we do. So we also know that individuals are interested. We get lots of questions about it. And what we're doing, this has just recently come into effect, sort of officially, unofficially. We're merging with the other local nonprofit, which is called Greening Niagara, and they do about 26 community gardens across the region here. They do a lot of work on food security, like sort of poverty relief, the health benefits of being environmentally friendly, and that sort of thing. So we'll be merging with them. We technically did in March 1st, but we haven't really announced it yet, so this is sort of a pre-announcement.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. So we're hoping that through that, my dream, I don't know, have you ever heard of Project Neutral?
I'm not sure if I have.
So it's the Project Neutral is essentially what we do with the Carbon Project, but it allows people to actually organize on a neighborhood level. So whether it's through a church or through just like a neighborhood association, or even just like your street, if you wanted to do your street and go, you could all sign up through an app. So it's an app or a website, and it allows you to sign into your local utilities and, you know, your city water and all that sort of thing, and it automates your carbon footprint for you. So it's not just carbon, it's more of like your sustainability footprint, but it's sort of gamified in this sort of friendly competition way for you to be able to track and your behavior. So it'll ask you, so it gives you sort of an overview initially of like how you are based on your monthly usage of the things that you signed up for, so you can declare as much as you want. And then it will ask you survey questions like, you know, are you a vegetarian? Are you a vegan? And, you know, and kind of it makes some general assumptions about different lifestyle habits. But what it tells you is it sort of quantifies you on your neighborhood, so you can make your own very tangible commitments to reduce your footprint. So it'll say, like, you know, did you commute this week? And you say yes or no. And then it will say, okay, why don't you commit to carpooling at least once next week? And so, and then it reminds you just like an app, like a health, a lifestyle app would. And so I really want to bring that group down to Niagara and be the hub for that organization. So they would partner with us similarly to Sustainability CoLab does for businesses. And they bring it and it's done. It's something that we would provide for free. So residents in Niagara would just get a unique login, and then you can compete on like a community-wide level. And it's just, it's very cool. I've seen a demo of it and I just think it's amazing. There's nothing else like it that I've seen. I've looked.
Well, that, and that's called Project Neutral.
Yeah, it's called Project Neutral. They're in, and actually, if you're listening from Toronto, Guelph, or think London. Mm-hmm. They're definitely launched in Toronto and Guelph, and they're either already launched in London or they're planning on launching in London. Okay. Very soon. And I found out about them through my work with the TD Friends of the Environment Fund Board.
Right.
I've met with them a few times, and they just got invested in by, so people wonder what's happening with the cap and trade money. The proceeds of that, they've invested, I believe that they have now formally invested in Project Neutral to bring this program to people all over Ontario. So we're hoping that we get to be chosen as one of their next four launch areas within the whole region here. So I've been talking actively with them. They're just really wonderful. They're a small team too. They're just I think they're just two full-time staff people.
Cool. So. I wonder if they would like to have be interested in hosting a Green Corps participant over the summer. That could be.
Yeah. No. And I, you know what? Actually, I'll follow up with you on that because they're really great and they'd be great to work for.
Absolutely.
So they work out of the Center for Social Innovation in Toronto. If you're familiar with that,
I'd probably follow up with them as well, actually. Good leads.
Super cool.
that's really interesting. Just in the interest of time, I think I'll ask the question we have from Burgess again. He's just been, I have to give a shout out to Burgess for being so involved in the Between Two Flags and his questions. His question for you, Tikva, is, as follows. I appreciate that the majority of environmental work in industry is reducing businesses' impacts on the environment, especially when considering carbon footprints and climate change. However, in my current work, and he's with AgriTeam, he's currently in Mongolia, I am examining the impact that climate change has on business, in this case mining. Have you started approaching businesses to determine their understanding not of how they impact the climate, but of how the climate impacts them? If so, what types of responses are you finding? What actions are being taken? And what tools do you see coming from this reversing of the environmental model? So I guess he's asking more about the adaptation of certain industries or companies.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's so cool. I think I'm laughing to myself because on my more ranty and or angry or frustrated days, I always go, don't people understand that if we don't fix this, they're going to die?
Oh, I know.
Like,
yeah, right.
You know, we don't have, and I know that people who are climate scientists or people who work in the environment, we get to see the raw data. We understand it because we work in it, and that's something that we're really, it's sort of, what's the word? It's a bittersweet feeling to be aware, but also be very unhappy with the results.
Yeah, sure.
Because, you know, I feel very sensitive, I guess, to anything that's happening, especially when things like Trump happen. It's like, oh, my God, we don't have the time to deal with this. And it doesn't even have to do with policy anymore. It just has to do with, like, we just don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that turning it on its head and talking about adaptation is a great way for people to contextualize climate change, to make it seem like something that they care about. And I have a great example of that. We had our old environment, or our commissioner of, I want to say it was commissioner of the environment, don't hold me to that because I can't remember, for the Niagara region, but he was trying to talk about why we needed a sustainability plan for the region of Niagara, like at the municipal government. And one of the councillors, he told me this anecdotally, that one of the councillors did not refuse to accept climate change, just didn't believe in it. And this is, like, you know, openly happening on live TV. And so his tactic was not to talk about it from the environmental standpoint, but to talk about the real risk aversion for why we need to be adaptive to the climate, and also what the impact would be in a cost-wise for the regional government to try to fix things if we didn't do it proactively. So through that language, not talking about climate at all, just talking about, you have noticed these droughts, you have noticed the strain on the water system, you have noticed, the early frost killing, 90% of our cherries, our cherry yield this year, and the real impacts that have on the economy, on farmers, on the, load for administrative load that adds to the government trying to manage that, all of those people who are now looking for support. And it was through that kind of conversation that they got this sustainability plan approved and put into effect. So I think that it's something that I'm very interested in. It's something that we're working with the City of St. Catharines on right now. So we just finished doing a community climate change adaptation engagement seminar. And actually, ironically, it happened the day that we had that freak snowstorm a couple weeks ago in Niagara. I'm sure. I think it went all the way up to Toronto. But we had a huge snowstorm, and like half the people who were planning on coming couldn't get there. So we haven't had any snow all winter. It's been so mild. And then, you know, in like the end of February, where it's been like 15 degrees for the last 2 weeks, we get like 2 feet of snow. It's just, everything stopped. It was, and it was just like most people would consider an average Canadian winter, but because it happened after a whole 6 months of nothing, people just weren't expecting it. Yeah. So it's not even that it's necessarily unusual weather in terms of, as Canadians we're used to snow, but it's the fact that the snow came unexpectedly, and what did that do to us in terms of efficiency?
Right.
How much? And so what are the added costs of things like that for the community? So we are starting to work on that, and that's where I really, again, see the engagement. We need that intersectionality between the residents, so people who live here and use services. You really need the municipalities on board, because they really need to help facilitate a lot of these conversations. They're really the middle ground between your average, taxpayer and the business owners. And, they have different interests. They're not usually competing, but unless we're working together, it's not manageable. Like, you really need a consensus to move forward on large projects that actually make adaptation possible. So we're just sort of, we're on the brink of that. It's definitely an area that we're going to, but it's very, I wouldn't say it's new, because we've always known that we want to talk about it, but it hasn't traditionally been our focus. But I think it's something we'll be introducing now that we are merging with Greening Niagara.
Well, I mean, it all sounds fascinating. I'm going to do a little bit more reading about that. I hope that one day we can meet. I'll be in Toronto next week.
I think we're meeting on Thursday.
Is it on Thursday? Okay, so I need to take a closer look at the schedule. But it's been a whirlwind. And, well, that's fantastic. That's even better. So
check. Kristen's been organizing it all. She's amazing. She's only been with us for a month, and she already does everything for me. So.
Okay, well, that's
including this, setting this up.
That's a great shout-out for Kristen, who is our Green Corps participant with NSI. And on that note, I guess just being aware of the time again, if you had any last words for the Green Corps participants across the country and in fact internationally, as we have some outside of the Canadian borders, or any kind of last message for NSI before we wrap up?
I would say that the best thing I could think of, I don't think I'm old enough to give advice to anyone, so that would just be a precursor to this, but that I get frustrated a lot. I get very, might not seem like it because I'm a cheerful person, but I get overwhelmed with the feelings of responsibility that we have as environmental professionals. Or even if you're sustainable, wouldn't call yourself an environmental, but a sustainability professional.
Right.
The burden of responsibility is huge, and knowing that we can do better and not seeing it move fast enough can be extremely frustrating. But I think that if you truly think that this is the right way, you have to sort of learn to manage expectations and understand that we're in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
It's almost like you have to accept and move on to be able to actually do it effectively, because the level of burnout in our community is huge. There aren't very many resources dedicated as a nonprofit. We already struggle with competing interests. There's a huge nonprofit sector here, and you have divided financial support for you're competing with other groups that also have equally important things that they're advocating on behalf of. So I think that you really need to be talking about, I don't even like the term self-care, but just being mindful that don't make it, like, it can be your whole life, but also try to balance it as well. So my way of doing it is I get frustrated, so I volunteer with the Green Party here in Niagara, because I need an outlet to sort of talk to others who are maybe a little bit more passion driven, I guess. But I really like that I can pragmatically work on it at work So I feel like I have a balance there. So don't burn yourself out and make sure that you don't get disillusioned or disengaged just because it seems impossible, because we need people to stay sort of involved and not burning out in order to achieve our goals. And if you look at the last 20 years, like, look how far we've come. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad started working out in renewable energy in wind farming in Ontario before there were any wind farms, and now there's so many. I mean, we now have a turbine in Toronto. Like, right. That wasn't there when I was a kid. So, you know, things have really changed, and try to hold on to that part because we are young, and I think we also feel disenfranchised because of work, and work is very difficult to find, especially if you're passionate about the sector. It is difficult, and it's not you, it's them, I want to say, almost like a, you know, stay passionate, stay involved, and you can always find ways, no matter what kind of work you're doing, to bring that sustainability into it, because I think it is a bit of who we are, like, and it can be a part of you, and you don't have to let it burn you out. Like, I think you do have control over that, so just find good people that you understand. I think I'm really lucky at my job where our other staff that we get to work with, we all sort of get it, and we all sort of understand that it's really bleak. The options look really bleak. It's very worrisome, but we also just know that if we don't do anything, that it's going to be, you know, the worst possible outcome. So it's worth trying. It's worth doing. And that sort of keeps us going. And we have a lot of really cynical humor in the office, but when we're facing externally, we try to be as positive as possible because, again, we're the ones who know. We're the ones who carry that burden of responsibility. And I feel like I sound so dogmatic and religious right now, but I really do think that it's just a matter of being a good example, and that will convince people that it's the right thing to do. So, and again, obviously, with all of the other work that we're doing to show why it's pragmatically viable and, you know, adaptively why it's important. But I think a lot of it is leading by example and showing that it's possible is the best thing. It's like people see it over time, and it needs to be repetitive for people to really learn the right way. So if you try to force it, it doesn't usually work. So being demonstrative and not burning out, not feeling angry, so harnessing that anger and turning it into something proactive, I think is probably the best lesson I've learned. I can get very frustrated, so I think that's what I usually try to do when I'm frustrated, is think, okay, how can I take this energy I have right now and invest in something better? that's all I really could offer.
No, that's great, and I think you've done a very good job of sounding fairly positive throughout the podcast, so that's great. And knowing that you're harnessing that inner anger, I like the idea of some of your other volunteer work, and that's a great outlet to have. I think it's something that I would encourage all Green Corps participants to think of, maybe some volunteer work in the field that might interest you. I think it's first of all, it's a great way to expand your network and gain other skills, but it just kind of gets you out of the pressures of the workplace and maybe allows for a more enjoyable time in a field that you're still quite passionate about. There was another point.
And I think everybody feels good when they give a little bit of altruism in their life.
I know, I completely agree, and there was one other point that I wanted to make there, but it's escaping me right now, and I won't dwell on it, but really appreciate that advice and your time today, Tikva. I look forward to meeting you in a few days, actually. It's already Tuesday, so... we leave actually tomorrow morning, so for Toronto. So thank you very much. It would be great to have you back on the show, maybe next year or later this year even. I think there's a lot more to discuss. NSI is doing fantastic work. Couldn't be happier that you're part of the Green Corps network, and looking forward to meeting Kristen as well and other participants in the region. So once again, Tikva from the Niagara Sustainability Initiative, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Scott, and thanks again for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Great, and thanks to all of our Green Corps participants listening today. Thank you again to Burgess from AgriTeam for his question, and We will look forward to next week's podcast. We've got some exciting speakers that we're negotiating possible times with, so we'll be sure to send you their bios before we speak with them, and hope that you will submit some questions for them as well. So thanks, everybody. Until next time, have a great week.